Lars, when was the last time you had sexual agency as a woman?
Every day.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you want me to say to that?
That's why you need feminism.
Yeah. That's why you need feminism, Lars.
Yo, what's up? This is actually the first podcast ever with your host, Joe and Lars, and I'm Rob, and I'm here as a guest.
Hi, Rob.
Thanks for joining us, Robo-Rob.
Rob, can you tell the audience, by the way, just a little bit about who you are and what you do so they can kind of have a little bit of a frame of reference?
I'm a professional duck penis expert, as we established last episode.
We haven't had one of those on in a long time.
Yeah, at least a week, right?
I think this might be the first time we've ever actually had one on air.
Now that I'm recalling, I'm not recalling a duck penis expert episode, so this is going to be really good for the audience, a completely serious episode.
Don't you have like a small side gig as a DJ, though?
I do, yeah.
Let's hear a little bit about that.
Well, I'm a producer at heart, a composer, really. I enjoy video games and video game music, and that's kind of where my heart lies. And orchestral stuff. When you go to the movies and you hear those big scores, right? The big epic scores behind the film. That's what I live for. That's what I love about movies and video games. This is the music that drives them. And I like remixing video games, music into new shit. Like, who would have ever thunk that we could have taken Spyro the Dragon and made it into, like, this electro banger or something, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. Or just, like, how we interviewed the lead developer on Spyro just, like, last week. Yeah,
yeah, you know that we interviewed the inventor of Spyro, right?
Yeah, and...
Well, he's not the inventor of Spyro.
He's the lead programmer, correct?
Yeah, he was
I
laid
like to
on
use
Spyro
terminology.
Crash. He was actually the creator of Elder Scrolls, though.
He's got a lot of good books under his belt. A lot of good games under his books.
Yeah, the books that
Over
are games.
Over 80 of
yeah.
them. He's been around. But anyway, back to what you do. You sample different songs,
not necessarily even sample. The sampling is actually illegal and I don't want to get caught doing it, so I don't publish those songs. But what I do and what my label does, Tiny Waves is my label that I work with, we do original music too, but we've had some pretty good success licensing and remixing video game soundtracks. Our last album that we just did was Spyro. We took songs from Spyro 1, 2, and 3, then tried to build off of the hype of the new game that just the reimagined trilogy that just came out.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So I remember back in the day, and it's probably still going now. Actually, there was something called OC Remix. That sounds like something that you would have been a part of, or are still a part of. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I have been a part of OC Remix. In fact, have you guys ever played, ever heard of the game Crypto the Necrodancer?
I absolutely have not.
Okay.
Played what?
Well, it's Crypt of
Is
the,
that real?
Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Absolutely
yeah.
not.
That doesn't sound real.
Well, it's real and it's fucking awesome. You should check it out.
All right, I'm gonna Google that. I'm gonna fact check that. But okay. Yeah. So you're saying?
It's a hybrid dungeon crawler rhythm game. And you jump around this dungeon collecting items and killing enemies to the beat of song.
I've heard of that. Yeah. I think Mark Brown did a video on that on Game Maker's Toolkit or something. That actually looks kind of cool. Yeah, I remember
it's
that.
It's a really fun, like, 16-bit throwback type of game with some really cool rhythm game mechanics.
Mm.
I love dungeon crawlers, and so I was immediately drawn to that type of game and that soundtrack. So when Overclocked Remix approached a friend of mine whose DJ name is Flex Style, and he asked me if I wanted to be a part of that project with him, so I did four remixes of the original track, original songs that Danny Baranowski wrote. He also did like Super Meat Boy, and a couple of other cool indie games. Binding of Isaac was another one that he did, I think.
Soundtrack for Super Meepo is fantastic.
Oh yeah,
that was some good work.
Really, really good.
And it didn't get too old while you were dying 100 times. Like it didn't get too repetitive.
Right. Well, that's
that was a major.
That's
bonus.
The mark of a good dungeon crawler, right? Is like how many times can I play this game and how many times can I play this game and not be bored of it? You know, and so that's what Crypt of the Necrodancer was for me. I loved that game. But yeah, Flexstyle approached me and he said, hey, Overclocked Remixes is doing a remix album. It's official. It's going to be an expansion pack that you can buy on Steam and all this shit. So I was like, yeah, sign me the fuck up, man. And that was like my first foray into indie game remixing music officially. So that was cool. I did all the mixing and some of the mixing, all the mastering jobs on that. Probably some terminology you guys may or may not know, mixing and mastering, but it's a...
I know some words.
Okay, cool.
I can speak language.
Yes, I know what mixing and mastering are, dude. Like, I edit a podcast. That's like,
that's kind of
my job. Yeah.
So you know what that process is.
Yeah.
So I did all the mastering work for that entire remix album. There's a lot of really good, artists on that one, too.
Were there any bad artists on that one?
Oh, plenty of bad. There's always, like this is how I look at music, right? Like, especially pop music and like music that's popular and not pop music, but in the sense of music, popular music is 99% of music is garbage. It's just shit and subjective. If you like it, that's fine. It's fine if you like it. No one's going to hate you for it. I'm not going to hate you for liking shitty music. I like a lot of shitty music myself, but
I love shitty music.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there's just something about it.
I mean, I used to listen to like emo back in the day, you know, like that's shitty music. So,
I mean, there's some songs that I'll listen to where I'm like, I know this is a shitty song.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what Joe looks for in his collection.
It is. That's the primary thing.
Shitty. Can I piss people off by listening to it? That's what you're like. Your two things, Joe.
There are sometimes I'll listen to a song and I'm just thinking to myself, I hope somebody comes up to me and says, that's a bad song. And I'm going to go, well, I'm going to listen to it anyway. And it's just
nice.
Sort of.
So you're saying basically Sturgeon's Law applies to music?
Mm-hmm. Everything sucks, but...
Except for when it doesn't.
You know, there's some things that are game-changing, obviously. And within every genre and subgenre of music, there's game-changing artists, but like, on the whole, most music is like, it's especially with pop music, it's whoever you have connections with to make it become pop music. That's it. That's it. There's no, that's kind of like the one thing that I am still trying to get. It's just like, I've opened for like some of the biggest names, man. Like some of the big, and that's not a, like, I'm not flexing. I'm just saying like, that's something I've done. I've opened for
huge
names.
Who have you opened for?
Tiesto, Pegboard Nerds, Excision, Datsik, just like, and like, fuck Datsik now, obviously, like, he's a fucking rapist, but like, but I'm just saying, like, I've opened for the big names in the industry.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of, like, Skrillex? is that, like, a controversial subject?
That's not really in the Tiesto wheelhouse. That's kind of
it's all the same thing, man. It's like electronic music. It's just like, there's electronic music, and then there's not electronic music. Like, For me, Skrillex changed. He's one of those groundbreaking artists, but he did not do it alone. Like when he wrote Bangarang, he was like homeless, man. He was like living on a friend's couch, and his friend just so happened to be like the dudes from it was like a D&B group, and he was just like chilling on their couch in LA and living with them, and like they helped him write that album, you know, like. They helped him with sound design because he came from that screamo stage from First to Last, you know? So like, and he's not untalented, and he's one of the hardest working people in the game, but like his first album did not age. It just doesn't age well.
Yeah, it really didn't.
It's bad. It's like objectively bad now. And like
Bangarang?
Like the single Bangarang?
Scary Monsters.
And like Scary Monsters, like it's iconic. It's iconic. Electronic music, but it's not iconic in the same way that like Daft Punk Discovery is still listenable to this day. Like you can still put on Daft Punk and listen to that shit and it still sounds fucking cool. But like, yeah, you can't listen to 2011 dubstep and be like, yeah, this is really cool, man. This is my vibe. You're like, it's not like no one's going to be like, oh, you're cool. You know, like no one's going
to
care.
Well, I would say Discovery is definitely probably the easiest one to put on. Like you could throw that on at a party. It'd be fine.
Right.
Some of the other stuff, like Daft Punk's actually my favorite band, but I know I wouldn't throw on like Homework or something. Or
oh, I would throw on Homework in a heartbeat, man. I would throw on Homework. I would throw on Alive. I saw Alive 2007 in San Francisco.
Well, Alive, yeah, like, of course, but
it's so good. Like Discovery, but like I wouldn't really care about throwing on Random Access Memories. Like
there are songs on there that I would like to put in the mix. I wouldn't put the whole thing on.
Yeah. But like Homework is one of the first electronic albums that I ever listened to. And like when you're listening to Daft Punk, you're like, the cool thing about them is it's just like, they sampled everything back in the day. They gave zero fucks. They were just like, oh yeah, that's a cool little bass lick. That's a cool drum sample. That's cool. Michael Jackson's going hee hee. Like they sampled fucking like, don't ever sample me going hee hee ever again. But they sampled everything, man.
I actually met one of the members of Daft Punk one time. I was working at a valet, and he came through, and then his manager came through, so I met the manager.
The guy or Thomas?
I met Thomas, and then I met his...
It's Thomas.
Thomas.
Yeah.
And then I met his manager.
Thank you, Manuel. They're nice. French assholes. Yeah.
They were nice.
Just a little interesting tidbit, like, for members of the audience who listen to Daft Punk, this isn't really going anywhere with this information, but it's just kind of amusing to learn. Like if you check out Discovery and you look in the liner notes, they have almost no credits to the artists that they sampled. And it turns out that the reason that they did that is because most of the tracks that they did sample that like fans eventually discovered, they were on his dad's record label. So his dad was just like, yeah, you can do it. I'll let you get away with it. So, yeah, I don't know, just a little.
The Daft Punk was the Led Zeppelin of electronic music. They stole so much shit, but no one cared because they were good at what they did.
You could even say that they were the Daft Punk of electronic music.
Were they Daft Punks?
No, that actually came from, because they used to be in a shit punk band called Darlin with one of the guys who actually is in Phoenix now. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that band.
That doesn't sound... That sounds the opposite of punk.
Like someone reviewed their album as like a bunch of like Daft Punky trash, and then they just found that amusing, so they just ran with that as their name. This is the Daft Punk Trivia Podcast. We'll be right back after these messages. I don't know.
Welcome back to another exciting episode. After the break, let's change the subject a bit.
Real quick, Robo Rob. Just on the last,
how did you get your nickname, Robo Rob?
Real quick before we move on.
No, not real quick. Never move on.
Right. So I'm going to go ahead and mute Joe. Hold on one second.
Oh, God damn it. No.
So, do you ever listen to dubstep back in the day when it was actual dubstep?
Like, yeah, like the old school.
Like Panga and Scream and stuff like that.
And what's Kong?
I know who you're talking about. Just I don't remember his name. It's been
not
that long.
Congo. It starts with a C. It starts with a C. Why am I forgetting this?
I'm unmuted.
Well, because it's been like 15 years since that stuff's been out. It's kind of interesting because like when people think of dubstep today, they just think of like, you know, like sampling like power tools and stuff. But if you actually listen to like a Scream album, it's just like pretty subdued. Like,
oh yeah, it's chill, like, man. It's like someone smoked too much weed and then turned the sub oscillator on their track all the way up.
Yeah, I don't mind it though. Like I don't know.
It's fine. Remember that iconic picture on YouTube of that screamo emo chick with the tape over her mouth that says dubstep on it?
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? You know, it's like,
yes.
And it's got that like Cruella song remix in playing in the background. Like everyone loved that. Oh no, was it that Adventure Club song that everyone loved? That was dubstep, quote unquote, back in the day. I mean, at the same time though, like Nero is one of my favorite groups. Like they're just they're so good. And like, man, who else? Dubstep back in the day, like I didn't like Skrillex, you know, like I didn't like his style of dubstep. I didn't really even like dubstep back in the day.
Real quick, let's say goodbye to Chuck. He's been kind of memeing in the chat, but Chuck. I guess he's run out of time.
Oh, that's too
Chuck
bad.
Was very considerate. When I was muted, he asked if I was crying, and when I said I was, he says, "Damn, do you need a hug, bro?" He was genuinely concerned.
He's a homie.
He's a good human.
By the
being.
Way, I learned
Thank
an interesting
Chuck.
Fact about him. It turns out that his full name is not Charles, but Chuckles. Like, that's his actual, like, on his birth certificate. It's pretty weird.
Chuckles?
No. Yeah.
Who is Cuck No One?
Cuck No One? Oh, wow. Chuck, you just got butt slammed, and it was pretty subdued.
He's, was, okay, I'm out of here.
He's like, okay, I'm out of here now.
Okay, bye.
Okay,
I'm out of here. Goodbye. Okay, bye now.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye, Chuck.
All right, see ya.
By the way, Chuck has been listening in live. If you guys are listening to this now when it's released, we do record live on our Discord. If you guys want to come listen, don't be intimidated by Craig. He's just there in the background listening to everything and recording all of it for the rest of time.
Just like just the CIA like the already does.
Yeah.
We're on the same wavelength there, my guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, this bot called NSA bot. Let's just call him Craig. Make it sound nicer. Yeah. There you go.
Let's not call it spy on you in your living room bot. Let's just call it Craig bot recording.
Okay, so Rob, just out of curiosity, do you have a favorite? I'm realizing this is going to be impossible to answer, but do you have like a single favorite video game track?
Chrono Trigger, just that whole soundtrack, man. Chrono Trigger is not only one of my best games, but one of the reasons why that game is so immersive is the music.
Yeah, I think a lot of those, I guess they were Squaresoft at the time titles.
Yeah, Squaresoft, yeah.
Yeah, one of the benefits that they really had going for them is that they were orchestral, and they age well.
And jazz.
Like, as opposed to, at times, I suppose. And then, so like, if you listen to like a Final Fantasy soundtrack, other than maybe Final Fantasy X-2, which is just kind of weird, like all the other ones have aged pretty well. Like
the soundtracks, you mean?
Yeah,
like me and my friend had this discussion literally like this morning. We were just talking about how like even the bad Final Fantasy games, which is only like one or two really, and that's subjective at best, but like,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
Final Fantasy 13, not that great of a game, but that soundtrack was freaking insane, man. Like,
yeah, people really almost underestimate it too, because like they didn't really get into the game, so they missed out on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I've never played the game. I've never played the Final Fantasy series.
Well, you're missing out musically, I would say.
Musically, yeah.
And how many Final Fantasy games do you think they're gonna make? 100? 200?
3.
It's already been more than 3.
It's 3. Look it up. The Google search will back me up.
All right, I'm gonna look it up, but I don't think you're right.
They're at 15 now, I guess, if people haven't played it.
I mean, they're at more than 15.
Three.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Three. Oh, wow.
Oh, it was 3, Lars. You're right.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Rob, it sounds like you're imitating someone, but I'm not sure who.
I feel like it's an episode from an episode of The Simpsons. Oh, wow, Marge. That's really great.
Who's saying that?
I don't know. Like Ralph in school. Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. That's just the impression I get.
Joe, do you have a favorite video game track? Because I kind of want to give mine. Because I'm
Sonic
curious.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2 Battle.
Are you talking about the skateboarding song at the beginning? Because that, I mean, that was fantastic. But it's kind of not a video game song.
I don't know. It's just the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, Sonic. It's just no. But like, I feel like
it's more of a furry song.
I'm not really into furry stuff. So you know what you do on the weekend. I guess if you're knowledgeable about that kind of subculture, that's fine. I just know it as the song from Sonic Adventure 2.
I don't know.
Sonic Adventure 2
really
Battle.
I don't really have a favorite track. That's the one that stands out the most, and it, like, every time.
Well, that's like saying, like, I like, you know, Not the Same by Body Jar on Tony Hawk 3. That's like, it's just like a normal song, so that doesn't count.
My favorite video game song was, all those Tony Hawk albums, man. They had like Pennywise and Melancholin and Rage Against the Machine.
They were good albums.
Like, they reminded me of like those old school. Remember when you would go to the fucking FYE or whatever and buy the original soundtracks to like movies? Not the original soundtracks, but like the soundtracks to movies. You know what I mean? Like the Matrix soundtrack. Yeah. Oh, there's a difference. There's a big difference. There's mm-hmm. Howard Shore does Lord of the Rings, and then there's like these are the songs that you listened to on when that over and over again because the Blade soundtrack was so good.
Do you have a favorite movie soundtrack? Or is that also impossible to answer?
that one's harder than video games. Like, I know what kind of video games I like and the kind of music I like in my games. It's more mm-hmm. of the orchestral and the big moving pieces. But tell me about your favorite video game music, and then I'm going to think about what my favorite movie is.
Okay. Wait, Joe, was that your actual answer? Or?
Well, I don't know. There's nothing really that comes to mind. I don't play a whole lot of video games, as many as I'd like to. And,
well, yeah, you just spend most of your time playing Headball.
Right. but besides that, I don't know. Nothing comes to mind in this moment, you know.
Okay.
Unfortunately. So, sorry to disappoint.
Rob. Yes, you're disappointing. Rob, yeah. Have you ever heard of the composer brothers, the Follins? Tim Follin and I forget what his brother was.
That sounds really familiar, but okay. Well, not ringing a bell.
They did that really great ambient orchestral soundtrack for Echo of the Dolphin for Dreamcast. That's kind of...
God, dude, that game was so bad.
Yeah, but the music
was great, but the game was so bad.
I think I just burned it at one point because Dreamcast, you could just burn a CD and play the game.
Right.
And I think I like played it for maybe like a half an hour and didn't find it super amusing. Like, I feel like I overpaid for it, even though I... downloaded it, but the music was really good. They did a track called Beach for a game called Plock. Have you ever heard that one?
No.
I think that one's hard to top. It's a random SNES game that they were just like hired to do, and it was just one of those weird situations where like definitely more of the Bleep and Bloop kind of era, mm-hmm. and it was like it was one of those situations where it's like you listen to the album and it's clear that they're really overqualified for what they're doing. Like, they made something that would like be really good today with like today's equipment, but they were doing it on the SNES.
Just before their time.
Yeah. And then I think they both became priests. Like, they gave up video gaming because they wanted to like get close to the Lord or something.
Understandable.
Well, yeah.
And why wouldn't that be your next move?
Yeah. Like, if you're like a god of the video game soundtrack world, you want to like go meet the god of the universe.
Like, I don't know, like, talent. Yeah, come on.
By the way, you said you had an answer that you were going to try to come up with. Have you arrived? Otherwise, we can move on.
I think if I'm going to go with a favorite orchestral, like, that's the thing. Like, I like the orchestral stuff when I'm watching my movies, you know. Definitely up there is going to be Lord of the Rings. Definitely is going to be up there is Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Howard Shore is just an amazing composer.
That kind of seems almost like it'd be an easy answer, but yeah, I mean, it's hard it to really disagree
is,
with.
Like, it's just the soundtrack is so good. Like, and like Hans Zimmer, Inception mm-hmm. soundtrack is really, really good. It's just
Hans Zimmer and almost everything is almost usually everything. Really
yeah,
good.
He's just also one of those just like huge inspirations. Like, he's just so good at everything he does.
He is amazing, mm-hmm. but it's actually Han Solo.
Oh, well, that's wrong.
I didn't know that.
Stupid Joe. Anyway, so if they were opening the floodgates out to people, if they were going to do Inception 2 Electric Boogaloo, do you think you could do something that would live up to his work? In...
Electric Boogaloo.
Inception 3, the Inceptioning.
Inception 4, are you ready for more?
That was the first fourth joke. That was not bad.
Technically, it was the third joke because the first one was 2, the second one was 3, and the third.
Oh yeah,
one
Inception
was
4. Didn't have a wacky like title subtitle to it. It was just Inception. Okay,
right.
Just right. had a wacky theme.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just you're right. Guy. It's the.
I guess you could call,
in a row
Inception
row.
Wacky. It's not the first word I would use, but technically, I guess.
Me personally, though, I don't think I could do what Hans Zimmer did.
Han Solo.
Would you even want to? Or because I feel like
if for whatever reason they hit me up and said, "Hey, Mr. Anderson, please do this soundtrack for this big budget Hollywood film," of course I would say yes because I love writing music. So
Wait, so are we just casually assuming that we're in the Matrix when they ask this? Or what?
That's a funny joke I've never heard before.
Fucking dick. That's why we call Lars Big Dick Lars, because sometimes he's a big dick.
Wait, was that actually your last name? I have no idea.
My last name, yeah.
Oh, Robert
Pretty
Anderson.
Pretty obvious Lars the Big Dick.
I've never seen shit about his actual name.
Yeah, well, based on context clues, Lars, you should know. Now you're just being Big Dick Lars.
We've been talking about the Matrix in this episode. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if he's going for like a
Big Dick Lars. That's why we call him Big Dick Lars.
Large Duck Penis Lars Master.
Duck Penis Lars Master.
They're kind of a beefy nickname. If you like, you gotta shred off a word or
doesn't
two to
really
make
roll
it
off the tongue. What about Lars? Yeah. Large Penis Lars. Just kidding.
It's accurate, but it's not. I don't know.
Because you're being a large penis
on.
Let's
move on from this. This is spitballing that doesn't need to go on the episode.
No, let's Penguin Man the fuck out of that scene.
No, because you didn't say it at first, so we got to use all that. Sorry. That's legally binding.
Oh, sorry.
Rob, are you into any other nerdy shit?
I mean, yeah.
Good, moving on. No, but like, are you a gamer outside of the music stuff? Like, do you play games? Or?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm playing fucking lately. I don't even know, man. I just had a kid, so I haven't been playing.
Yeah.
I've been playing that much, but like, I still try and get on Overwatch a couple times a week.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, like, I noticed, like, I'll see you on Discord, like, it'll say playing Overwatch here and there, and I remember thinking, like, oh, I need to ask him if he plays any actual good games though.
Yeah. And you got
burn.
Me.
I actually just got Overwatch again because I used to have it for PS4, and then it was like randomly part of the Humble Monthly, so now I have it.
Right,
so I'm like.
I don't play it, but I own a watch.
Well, that's not what this is.
I know it's not. I'm sorry. Moving on.
I like the lore, and I like playing the game with my friends, but that's about the extent of my Overwatch experience.
Well, that's pretty good. Like, it's a game that you enjoy, like, the story for and the gameplay. Like,
that's kind of like the reason why.
That's
friends.
Really good too.
So,
you have a series of friends that hang out with you.
Yeah, it's great, man.
That's good. That must be nice.
Just line up at his door, you know, take 30 minutes at a time, and once their time is up, that's it.
How does that work? Like, they show up randomly?
They hang out on Steam, dude. That's clearly.
It's an all URL experience.
No. Friends. You keep each other company for the friendship? What?
Oh, I thought you were going to say friends. You keep each other warm at night.
Keep each other warm at night? I'm just kidding. I'm pretending like I don't know what friends are or something.
It's a good gag, but no one cares or is laughing, so.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I figured I would try
BTFO,
to force it.
BTFO, dude. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Put me in my place.
Yeah. Are you a hypothetical question kind of person, by the way? Because we have many, many traditions on the show.
I heard
that
some of the hypotheticals last week when you guys were talking to Cuck No One, and I just don't. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'll play your game. It's your podcast.
Okay. Well, we don't have to ask like the duck questions again. We've been trying to move away from that.
Let's get away from it. This week, I would just like to be a penis expert instead of a duck penis expert.
All right. Have you ever seen any penises that really stood out for like scientifically bizarre reasons?
Yeah, there was one time I remember I was in a YMCA locker room after a game of, you know, what's that game where you play where you hit the
Frisbee.
Ball again? No. You hit the wall with the ball.
What's up? Racquetball.
Yeah, I was playing racquetball with a buddy, and bizarre experience. I'll never do it again. Sports. And then we went to the locker room, took a shower, and this guy, it was like open showers, right? So all of us could see each other, everything, and. He literally
you don't want to.
I mean, you don't want to, but like, how do you not look at like a 10-inch dick that is just like the size of a pencil all the way down?
Jesus,
are you sure that wasn't actually a pencil?
Oh, it was a thing.
How do you know it wasn't a regular size dick with a 10-inch foreskin the size of a pencil?
Well, then it would still
like
be small
anteater.
Because the foreskin goes over the. Do you not understand dick anatomy?
It blew my mind, man. Like,
could it have been a 10-inch foreskin?
10-inch foreskin. God damn.
God.
Please be.
I'm glad we decided whether, to talk about this.
I'm not sure I want to like include all of this on there.
So I naturally know which questions to ask.
I'm gonna make an executive decision on which parts to include. Right. We kept a lot of the foul anatomy questions on the Chuck's episode, but I did pare it down just a little bit because I feel like the audience hearing, you know, just like 10 minutes of duck penis, it probably wasn't for the best. So you play a lot of sports is what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I play, I could kick your ass in the game of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. You don't even know.
You remember what your high score was in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2?
Oh, it was definitely in the millions, man.
Same.
Like, you could just ride around the entire skate park. You didn't have to get off. You could just grind everywhere.
It was a fun game to play. I actually want to get an emulator and play it like tonight. I'm going to download an emulator right now.
Just good idea.
I'll do it after.
Just putting a very strict 48-hour limit on it, though. Why not just play it until you run out of enjoyment? I mean, you don't have to do the two nights thing.
What?
Wait, did you say just two nights? Oh, I thought you said two nights. Like I'm gonna play it for a couple days and I'm gonna let it.
Think I said that? I thought you were doing some kind of weird gag.
I actually did hear you say that. Yeah, Discord audio is not perfect.
I'm gonna play it tonight, and you said I'm gonna play it two nights.
Yeah, you had a lot of mustard on that last tea. Two nights.
Welcome back to the podcast of my brother, and Greg.
Thanks for joining us for another exciting episode of my brother, and Craig. My name's Greg. I'm going to be your first Greg joining us for another exciting episode of Greg. And with me, as always, I have Greg.
We don't have a Greg on this episode.
I have other Greg.
We don't have one of those either.
Shut the fuck up, Lars.
Only Craigs are derivatives thereof.
You know what, Lars? You're always contradicting me. And frankly, I've had enough.
You just get things wrong, so I try to correct it. I try to,
You know what? That's fair. I shouldn't be reacting the way I am. And I sincerely apologize. I'm really, really sorry.
Believe it or not, by the way, Rob, that was kind of a gag on Joe's part. He used to do this thing on earlier episodes, which I'm kind of glad that he moved away from, where he would just like randomly just be like, shut up, and that was supposed to be like funny, like in the first couple episodes, like that was his shtick. It's kind of a wonder that our show has survived.
It's a great story. Thanks for telling it to me.
Yeah, Lars.
Yeah, well, as boring as that story was to hear, imagine being the brunt of that every week. It was.
I wouldn't be friends with that person ever again.
Yeah, Rob, do you watch? Are you a fan of Death Note?
I did watch Death Note. Yeah. Not mm-hmm. the Netflix version. The Netflix version. It was horrible, but it, like, even
there
objectively,
was no
it was just objectively bad.
Yeah, even if you take out the fact that, like, it was just kind of not a good adaptation in any way, like, yeah.
Well, that's the thing with anime, man. Like, I'm not, like, a huge weeb, but I do like some animes, right? But, like, at the same time, it's like, there's some things culturally that you can't adapt into American live television from Japanese animation. You just can't do it. And I'm really worried that they're going to fuck up Cowboy Bebop. I'm just like, if they fuck it up, I'm going to riot.
Just you rioting? Just like,
yeah, just me, just me in my house, just throwing things everywhere. My wife will probably leave me because this is a horrible thing for me to riot over.
I respect the passion. That's understandable. Yeah, there was this one scene in Death Note, the Netflix adaptation. Oh boy, where like he sees Ryuk in the classroom for the first time, and he just starts. I don't want to say screaming. He starts like wailing, like a teenage girl.
Definitely subverted my expectations in the sense that, like, I thought that he probably didn't have a penis at that point. If he wanted to, like, bring it back around and go full circle with the penis jokes.
We always like to go full circle with the penis jokes.
The penis jokes, yeah.
But let me link something to the channel real quick. I actually uploaded this on my channel because they had an old example of it back in the day that was, like, it was recorded on a potato, so I tried to, like, make it a little more HD. But this is a concept called NARM in media, where the scene's trying to be serious, but it ends up being like really funny because they just did something wrong in it. But in this scene, basically the character is portrayed as having a stroke,
Narm. Oh.
But he keeps narm. It gets silly because it's like they're trying to play it for dramatic, but he keeps going like narm, and then he like does this snort where he's like at the end where it's just like he overdoes it too and just like slams on the floor. And I don't know, like that, what it just like that moment in Death Note was like really narmy for me. Like it's just like it wasn't supposed to be funny at all, but it was really funny.
There's that threshold, right, where like that's make a scale from 0 to 10, and like 10 is like the best movie or game, whatever. You keep going down, and like 5 is like it's subjective, it's whatever, some people like it, some people hate it, but it's just an eight game. And then like from like 4 to like 2, maybe 1.5, there's this area where it's just like it's a bad game, don't play it. But then it flips, and it's just like, this is so bad it's good. It's so bad it's good. And there's a lot of content out there that's just like narm, and I feel like narm is definitely like it's so bad it's good.
Yeah, it's unintentionally amusing. I think Joe and I actually kind of that's actually the theme of some of our episodes, like where we'll go back. Like one of the episodes we did was specifically with the host of a podcast called the Stupid Sequels Podcast, where we reviewed Troll 2. Are you aware of what this is?
Well, I mean, they're eating her and then they're going to eat me. Oh my God.
Yeah. Like the movie with that scene. Yeah. That's kind of one of those, like, I don't know if I'd say it's so bad it's good. It's so bad it's amusing. Joe, would you say that's fair?
Yeah. I'd like, say it's amusing because it's so bad.
Like, and it's very unintentionally amusing in a lot of ways.
But only like, if you've got, like, somebody there to watch it with or you're going to discuss it. I wouldn't want to watch it by myself, even though it's bad. Like, I would only want to watch it, like, with a friend to laugh
at.
Yeah,
like, I would never watch The Room by myself, but I will always watch The Room with a group of friends and we can bash on it, you know?
Of course. I've done that before. Like,
All those types of movies. Troll 2 is probably one of them, but I don't know. I didn't really, it was kind of dumb. Oh, remember, what was that movie with Jennifer Lopez in it with the snake? No. With the big old fucking snake in the jungle. Had Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez in it. I think it was just called Anaconda, right? It was just
Jumanji.
Anaconda.
Jumanji.
No, I think it was Anaconda.
No, you're thinking of Jumanji.
Stupid Joe. you really derailed that one for no reason. Thank you. So you're saying when it comes to Anaconda, don't watch that movie?
No, watch it with your friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
we're Joe and I kind of do that semi-frequently. We're going to be doing another movie, which is called Shark Exorcist.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Oh boy, it is. Okay, so I want to preface this by saying that I think I've seen probably like at least 1,000 movies at this point. I'm not joking. Like I've seen many, many, many movies over the year, and that is the worst movie I have ever seen.
Just oh, nice.
Full stop.
And you've seen Star Wars: The Last Jedi?
Yes.
That statement still holds. Wow.
Well, yeah. Actually, I made an intro for that episode, which we're going to be recording very soon, in which we make fun of people like you who say that Star Wars The Last Jedi is the worst movie ever. Like, it's not. It's just Star Wars, dude. Like, you'll be all right.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I don't. I'm not one of the Riri fanboys he's been a twist. But at the same time, it's like I laughed in the movie theater at how bad that movie was. It was just like, okay, you guys just like. There's no subverted expectations here, which is what all the like smart people that thought they were smart with argument were. They're like, well, it subverts your expectations. No, it's just bad writing and horrible character design. That's what that movie was. Character design, character story. Their story arcs were dumb. This whole casino thing was stupid. Like, I was literally laughing in the movie theater.
I think in episode 2 was my point of laughing in the theater. When-
oh, yeah.
Do you remember there was a scene where Anakin's like, I think he says, Like, he just says the line, like, I miss her so much, but, like, the way that he says it is, like, that, like he got, like, his like, genitals, like, bit into midway. He's, like, trying to get through the line.
Like, he came straight from what was Dawson's Creek or whatever that show was. The huge television show, man. Like, one of the biggest dramas ever. And gets a cast in Star Wars. Fucking Star Wars, man.
That's huge. He's not that bad of an actor.
He's just
he doesn't belong there at all.
No, not at all. Not one fucking bit.
Like, they might as well just have cast Danny DeVito in the role. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
That would have been fucking amazing.
Actually, you know what? I would have liked that. You could put Danny DeVito in just about any role, and I think I would enjoy it just because he was there. The one role that he didn't get, though, which I'm still bummed about, is he didn't get to be Detective Pikachu. Ryan Reynolds, I'll take it, but do you remember the petition for that?
Yeah. I remember. I signed.
You're trying to get him to do, of course, yeah. Joe, I think that'd be a great movie. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Are you still there?
Yeah, that sounds good. Good to me, I guess.
What are we talking about?
Whether or not it'd be a good movie.
Shark Exorcist. Danny DeVito is the shark in Shark Exorcist.
That'd be good. Mm-hmm.
The movie is terribly named, by the way. Like, the shark is not an exorcist. It's, there is a shark, and then there is an exorcist. And so he doesn't...
Who is the shark trying to exorcise a demon from the priest, or is... I'm not following here.
Okay, so let me explain some of the lore here. So... there's this Catholic nun who kills 14 schoolgirls and then goes to the water, stabs someone in broad daylight, and then asks Satan for a shark. And she's at a lake. So the shark kind of hangs out in the lake for the movie and just eats people.
Because that's where sharks are, is lakes.
Hey, I don't know. Hopefully this isn't derailing things, but Rob, have you heard the debate about whether or not Baby Is Called Outside is problematic?
I mean, isn't that like a 3-year-old argument at this point?
I guess so. I just heard it this year.
Yeah, it's mostly 3-year-olds just kind of sitting around just like crying about it.
I don't know. I think it's making a resurgence this year. I would just be curious to know your opinion real quick, and then we'll move on if you have one.
I feel like the context of the song is probably rapey in 2018, but that's not what it was written about in, 1960 something?
That's 1950? True.
I think, like, it's earlier than that. Yeah, I think it's way before that.
It's an old 30s. Yeah, it's an old song, so that's just been, you know, redone over the years. But
so it is kind of rapey in 2018. What are the implications of that? Well. No,
it's kind of like Skrillex's first album. It hasn't aged well.
It hasn't aged.
Basically.
No, it hasn't aged well. But does that mean we take it off the air? Like, what does that mean, though? I don't know.
Well, they could take out the lines that are like, what's in this drink? Because that means something completely different now. Like,
yeah.
That used to mean like, oh, I'm drinking too much. Oh, I have to have sex with this person.
At the same time, here's kind of what I'm thinking. First of all, I don't really care about this. Yeah. It's interesting that people get so heated.
He cares so little that he posted about it twice today on Facebook, is what he's saying.
I mean, today of all days is the day I care. Tomorrow I won't care. Today I care a little, very little.
Yeah, every other day, basically, he goes on a rant about it.
Isn't the song originally about, like, finding ways to excuse...
the behavior that would normally be in that time.
The idea is it's being brushed under the table, like, oh, it's cold out, I didn't want to bother, so
it's not saying, hey, there's something in your drink, I'm gonna rape you. Like, it's saying hey, it's cold outside and I'm a witty guy and you're a sexy woman and you're gonna own your sexual agency. Like, that's sort of how it was written.
The way it was written was that back then women did not have the autonomy to just say yes, I'll sleep with you. So they had to say no a bunch of times before eventually giving in. So the guy has to give her reasons, like, oh, it's cold. She's like, yeah, I guess it is cold. Oh, you had too much to drink. Oh, I guess I did have too much to drink. I guess it's okay for me to stay. But in 2018, the way it kind of comes across is he's asking her repeatedly to stay, and she's repeatedly saying no, and he's not taking no for an answer.
Well, she's not really saying no. It's just kind of like she's saying, well, I don't know.
That's true. That's true. But the guy keeps trying. And so, and there's not, I mean, there's nothing wrong
there's
with
keeping
trying.
There's a difference between something awkward and then someone being rapey.
The like main thing to me that makes it okay is that she seems to like him. She seems to be okay with it. She's not raising her voice. She sounds very pleasant, you know, about
well,
the whole situation.
Yeah, except for like in the death metal version of the song, she right. does raise her voice a bunch, but that's yeah. just, you know,
so,
for the aesthetic
screams
song.
A lot in the screamo version.
I think my favorite version would be the sexual tension version with Zooey Deschanel and Will Ferrell bathroom set of Elf.
Oh, that's a good
ooh.
One.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of sexual tension, can you do something for the audience real quick, Rob?
No.
At one
nothing. Not for them. Not for those fools.
At one point, you said the phrase "exercise your sexual agency" in a very like "haha" kind of way. Can you repeat that real quick?
Wait, what did I say?
You said the woman is exercising her sexual agency, like.
Yeah, man. It's like that's the feminist movement, though, right? Like the woman should be able to choose.
Mm-hmm.
That's what feminists are fighting for, right? That's why I think like third wave feminism is a fucking joke, man. Like I don't want to go into that, but like
aspects of third wave feminism are obviously problematic. Is that's a fact?
Yes.
You're not.
That's what.
It's complicated, but yeah. That's yes. I mean that's undeniable. And then Joe's part of the awkward fourth wave of feminism where
a fan of the awkward fourth joke in the row.
Yeah, that was what I was going for with a little bit of a reference there, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, I didn't play along.
But it's cold outside, Joe.
Sorry. Hey, Rob?
Hmm?
Can you ask Lars when the last time he cried was?
Lars, when was the last time you had sexual agency as a woman?
Every day.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you want me to say to that?
That's why you need feminism.
Yeah.
That's why you need feminism, Lars.
It's okay to cry, man.
Okay to cry, yeah. Lars.
Well, I would, okay yeah, you would know that, Joe. That's kind of what you do.
I would.
That's actually, by the way, he was trying to subvert a thing where every time a guest comes on, I'll message them privately and say, can you ask Joe when was the last time that he cried?
He's right, and I know I remember that he didn't do it this time, so I was like, I'm going to jump to the punch.
Joe, what's your favorite Christmas song?
I'm Jewish.
That has no...
I'm just kidding. I am Jewish, but...
But everyone still has a favorite Christmas song, man.
Also, everyone has a party pooper, and just now that was you.
I was going to say, all I want for Christmas is you.
Hmm.
Are you saying that to Rob, or are you saying that's your favorite song?
Favorite song, because I heard it live. I heard it in, like, 2002.
Like, and, just people were singing it on the street?
No,
like, what,
I saw a concert, context? And she was performing it live. One Bible verse apart.
What?
When you dance, it's supposed to be one Bible verse apart.
No, it's supposed to be enough to have Jesus in between you. That's
yeah, one Bible verse. Like a tenth of a millimeter. Just ripped off the page.
You're wrong, but whatever. I don't care enough to argue that.
I want to use that clip right there of just you saying wrong, but whatever. I don't care enough to argue is my response to everything Joe said. All right. What were we talking about? I forgot.
Favorite Christmas songs, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mine is Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney.
That's a good one.
That's a great one. I'm going to listen to that. I'm gonna leave, guys. I think I'm going to go listen to that.
You know, just go listen to it.
Oh, there's one thing that we actually didn't do, which you said you did want to do, which is you wanted to talk about your music and maybe plug it a little bit. We never actually did that, and I would not want to rob you of that opportunity.
Okay.
Or rob you of it.
I mean, I've been musicking since I was a kid. I went to college for it. Like, it's what I do.
Is that your job or?
Yeah, I'm a sound engineer and a composer. That's I work from home and take care of the baby, and work on music.
You have a baby.
Do you have a baby?
And is it mostly orchestral stuff or?
Like, no, it's all over the place. I recently just wrapped up a contract doing music for a game that will be played in casinos. So you go and sit down and play virtual games in casinos. I wrote a bunch of jazz trio stuff for that. Just
can you play one? Just like
yeah, with your mouth right now,
or whatever.
With my mouth,
like however it goes.
I'm not gonna do anything with my mouth right now. That
well you're doing something with your mouth by talking. So that's
I'm actually talking out of my ass. So
it's kind of true. what was I going to say? Do you do like actual like commissions for video games, or is that?
Well, he just told you he did one just now.
Well, I mean, like not like casino. I mean, like a
real video game.
No, like console or PC. You know,
like a real video game. Yeah. Well, I did Crypt of the NecroDancer, the DLC, the overclocked DLC, and then I did. Oh, there was a couple mobile games I've done, and you know, like to be honest, that those paid really really well comparatively. The mobile games are like quick, fast cash for composers, which is nice.
Are you able to say like how much a mobile game pays?
I mean. It depends on
like they pay you in packs of depends or
yeah I prefer the largest
stupid
size
joke. I'm sorry.
No, it works. I enjoy it. I'm a dad now. I have to do dad. I have to appreciate dad humor. So I appreciate
no, but
that.
Like so what you're saying is if you were doing basically like exclusively mobile game music, you could make a decent living off of it.
Yeah, especially if you're hooked in with the people who are making the games. Like, you know, if you're hooked in with the people that are like, hey, I need you to write me a song that sounds like you're fighting monkeys in the African jungles. And so it's like, okay.
As you do. Yeah.
You ever get a request like that and it's like so bizarre you don't know where to go from there?
Oh, man. Dude, I have had so many weird, bizarre, like I was working on a game for an IP that never got off the ground, and the guy basically said, I want you to make me a game that sounds like Dave Brubeck had sex with Metallica. And I was just like, so you want metal jazz, you want metal guitar with jazz? That's gonna sound dumb. I don't want to do it. And I tried my best and I sent it to him. And he's like, okay, but this time I need you to make it darker.
But that's not a fusion at that point if it's just mostly metal. Like
get rid of the jazz, basically. Like, put in the jazz and take it out.
It's metal jazz, but without the jazz.
Yeah. All right, now try it without the jazz again. Oh, perfect. I like this.
Oh, God.
Did you have, like, a NARM moment when you first heard what he wanted? Like,
yeah, I had one person tell me they wanted SpongeBob music for their YouTube intro. I
like just like to rip the track or?
Basically wanted me to like I basically sent them something that sounded like you would hear on the in SpongeBob, and they loved it. They paid me $200 and I went on my way, so I was like, whatever.
Ah, that's a nice story. That sounds like a positive event.
That sounds yeah
like the outcome was fine. I hated doing it, but the outcome was alright.
Destroyed your soul, but $200 is $200.
How long does it take to do that? Like a few hours?
I actually only spent a good, I'm probably like in all, I only spent like 4 hours. Yeah, like 4 hours though on that project. Mm. Yeah, like not long comparatively.
Well, that's like, pretty good. That's like $50 an hour.
Yeah, dude, it's not bad at all, you know?
Yeah.
So,
So in my experience, by the way, I have kind of a rule of like three with the episodes that I do where it takes like approximately three times as long to edit it as it does to record it. Do you find like similarly lengthy amounts of time being devoted to this, or do you kind of have it like a groove at this point?
I mean, I do have a groove, but it just depends on what I'm doing. Like when I'm writing, I don't put a time limit on that. I don't really like think about it, but there'll be times where, like, for example, I just released an album, an EP. It's three songs and they're kind of like electronic music with jazz fusion elements in it, and like
house. You have a link to that we can put out, by the way, if you want.
Yeah, I'll give it to you after the show. After we're done. The one of the songs, the guy that is featured on there, his vocals are just so raw, right? And like, it didn't matter what, I probably spent like 8 hours editing one verse of his vocals. And it's not that he was bad. It was just, they were so raw. And
what do you mean by raw?
It's a sound engineer thing, Joe.
It's a sound engineer thing. You wouldn't understand. When I say raw, I mean like the raw energy. I basically told him like, this song doesn't really have a set structure, and I want you to just play your guitar and sing on it the way you would if this was a jazz song. And he just sent me back these lyrics that were just like catchy and fun, but like sometimes they were in tune and sometimes they weren't, and sometimes he played his guitar in tune and sometimes it was out of rhythm, but sometimes it was just right in the pocket. And it was just raw. They're like really just like good recordings, but it took me a long time to record them.
So what do you have to do? You have to make it sound like it's in tune even though it's not, and you have to make it sound like the rhythm is good and it really there's no rhythm or not the right
with
rhythm.
with his vocals, there was a little bit of like moving a word backwards or back or forward on the beat just a little bit. Mm-hmm. or like editing the tone.
By the way, Joe, the video I just linked in the chat is, if you don't quite have an idea in your head of what raw is, like just listen to this guy on your own time. You'll get what I mean, or what Rob meant.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, I have an idea. I know what Rob meant. I just didn't know like how he was using it, if it meant something different.
You thought maybe like he meant it like raw dog or like yeah.
No, I mean, raw means like very emotional, like without structure or whatever necessarily, like you said.
Well, sonically, there's a little bit more to it, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was like a technical way he was using it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, you know, it makes sense. Like, there's probably something I'm missing, but I get it for the most part.
There usually is, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was really fun, but like my recording process for that was actually pretty simple for my parts. I knew what chords I wanted to lay down, and then I recorded that over a basic drum beat and then played bass and then recorded that in, and it was pretty much like two or three takes and I got it down. But then the editing process was long. It was longer. Mm-hmm. It was definitely longer.
Yeah. The editing is always longer. So we're kind of going to wrap things up here on the episode since we've been going for a billion years. Went by pretty quickly, but I'm seeing here we've been going for at least an hour 15. Number one, my question that I've always kind of had for the Otis McDonald's type of the industry, where they just seem to be kind of a jack of all trades. They do music for hire, which is just kind of blows my mind. And I'm curious, how do you even get into that? How do you just learn everything that you can produce anything? Just, here, go do some metal jazz. How does it even work?
Practice.
That's just it.
like I'm not gonna. I won't lie and pretend that I just know how to do it, man. Like, I'm taking piano lessons since I was 4. And I'm 33.
Got it. So it's just like a 10,000 hours kind of thing.
Yeah, man. Like I know music theory, and I studied music in college, and I still study music. You know, like, I may not like country music, but I'll still sit down and listen to it for an hour, you know, and
for like, 6 days in a row.
6 days. Want to kill myself
on
afterwards.
Repeat without going to the bathroom or eating or drinking.
Oh boy,
depressed, laying on the floor.
Is there anything specific that you can do? Is it literally just you got to study everything and that's that?
I think it's studying and then networking. Because like someone could go do this without having any knowledge prior. You know, they could just be like really good at like hearing what sounds good and then playing it, you know, and especially with the production tools people have these days, it's crazy. Back in the day, man, like I was in punk bands and rock bands and ska bands and then I was in orchestra, you know, in school and symphony and jazz band and marching band. And like, but we didn't have
all in the same year.
All in the same, like,
all in the same day.
All of them.
By noon. So basically, he was in the jazz band.
You did a little bit of everything, so you could learn a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything, and I liked the jazz and orchestral stuff growing up, and then my dad introduced me to Queen and Zeppelin and Kansas and Boston.
Like, you met them?
No, he was saying that he introduced. Okay, Joe. Funny stuff.
I did meet Pat Benatar. That was cool. I met Santana, Carlos Santana. That was cool too. But yeah, like, he introduced me to, like, the classics, classic rocks. And then my mom was very much like, okay, yeah, but listen to this jazzy music and this church music.
Jazzy church music is one of my favorite genres. So
yeah,
I understand.
Favorite subgenre of church music is jazzy church music.
Oh, that reminds me, like, you know, you're talking about, like, ridiculous fusions of genres, and one of my friends and I had an idea. Do you know what grindcore is?
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I had an idea of, like, doing, like, a fusion of gospel and grindcore and calling it gospel grind. I feel like that would be kind of amusing to do. It's just like a stupid one-off song. I don't know.
You ever hear about Mozart rap?
Mozart rap?
Yeah, it was his real rap phase.
I feel like someone's probably tried Mozart rap at some, like, just with there being so many people, someone's probably tried to fuse those at one point.
I've seen Edgar Allan Poe rap.
Well, yeah. That's just MC Lars.
That's just right. MC Lars, yeah.
Yeah.
Who I've opened for several times. He's a good friend.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I'm not making a joke, by the way. There's actually an artist named MC Lars who does that kind of stuff.
Wow, yeah, he sings that song, Raven or whatever.
Yeah,
that's cool. What's he like?
Poe, you're going hard in the trajectory. He's a fucking nerd. What do you think? He's great. Okay. He's cool. Got a really positive attitude, and he loves making silly raps out of English literature. Like,
do you know him?
Yeah.
Do you think you could ask him if he could be on the podcast?
I'm sure he would probably say no because he's busy, but I'll ask him.
Wow, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a no from him. Thank you.
A no.
No, I just like it. You know, like I used to listen to him back in high school. It'd be fun to interview the guy if he turned out to not be super busy for one day at some point. I don't know. Like,
he's been grinding super hard. He's doing some stuff with another Megar, and they're doing some really cool.
Speaking of collabs, aren't you supposed to do one with Chuck Nunn still?
I mean, it's still in the works, but that'll be out in probably early 2019. Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys have it planned? Is what you're gonna do with it yet, or I still think pulling something out of Weber Cooks could be pretty good.
just have Hello Wildcats, and then it drop into some hard.
Yeah, so. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like, just right there.
Great minds think alike.
No, I mean, I'm going back to my, like, electronic roots with this next EP. So
okay.
Straight up, like, the golden years for electronic music for me was like 2011 to 2014 of electro and complextro and, like, the really heavy hitting electronic artists, Wolfgang Gardner, Benny Benassi, Deadmau5, all those guys, like, the huge inspirations for what I'm trying to do right now. So
I went the complete opposite direction during that era, because I got into, like, chill wave and then into vapor wave, and then I don't know, like, I think I got lost electronic music wise during that era. I guess I think I missed out.
Yeah, it was easy to do, man. And, like, the future funk is still one of my favorite, like, subgenres, where it's just like everybody's taking these like Japanese funk songs from the 70s and 80s and flipping them and putting drum beats to them and shit. Like, it's fucking cool.
Have you heard Macross 82-99?
Oh yeah.
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 I'm a fan of theirs. You were the first person I've ever heard that has said yes to that question. That's good. I'm glad someone else has heard of them.
Yeah, they're good stuff. I like a lot of the future funk stuff, especially the stuff that's like its own music. Like, it's,
by the way, Joe, thanks for eating chips right now. I have to edit all of this out. God damn it.
I didn't say anything. Just
not the conversation. I just have to go do extra work for his audio track now.
I didn't say anything. Just cut everything that's not dialogue.
I think I'm just going to cut your track entirely. I think it'll just be me and Rob this time.
Oh, jeez. That's probably for the best.
Oh, and so like one last kind of thing. This may be difficult to answer, but do you have like a magnum opus? Do you have something that you're just like most proud of that people should go listen to? Other than the metal jazz stuff.
That's never getting released. I think it's like a 2-part thing. Well, technically like a 3-part thing, but between 2016 to 2018, I released 3 EPs of original music, and they were like progressive electro meets tech house music, and those are like 3 subgenres of their own, you know, of their own thing, but of their of house music itself. But I wasn't really like, I didn't really have a direction, and so I was like tired of just making video game remixes of all the time, and so I was going to do some deep moody stuff, and that's basically what happened. Just made a bunch of deep moody tech electro house, and those are all called Pulse.
Okay,
you can look up Pulse by Robo Rob, and you'll find 3 albums, and all 3 of those albums tell an overarching story if you listen to them front to back. So,
and if you listen to them back to front, it tells like a reverse story.
Yeah, it's like the reverse, like the reverse.
Yeah, it's like
storytelling.
It's like in
it's like a hidden gem.
Like the music version of Braid, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Rob, you did a pretty great job of introducing the show. You wanna end it for us?
This was the final podcast with your hosts Joe and Lars, and I'm Rob. And bye,
man. It's the final podcast.
Actually, I did want to ask you one more question, Robo Rob. I wanted to ask you the duck question. All right, well,